lost our offices in St. Towers in D.C. So I do apologize for being late. If we look at the agenda, we have, honorable members, we have a briefing by the National Development Agency. Then we also have the Central Drug Authority. And I've also invited the Office of the Auditor General this morning. Members will see that the presentation has been handed out to them. Just to brief us on an overview of the 2008 and 2009 audit of the Department of Social Development, just to give us that. And also just to explain the role of the Auditor General and the scope of audit. Is that correct in my summary? So I would like to propose a slight adjustment to the agenda, that we first take the Auditor General's presentation, and then we will go to the NDA and the Central Drug Authority. But before I give over to the Auditor General's office, I just want to say to the Director General and his team and the entities that are the representatives of the National Development Agency and the CDA, welcome to this committee meeting. And I do apologize once again for you, the fact that you had to wait. But this will be the last engagement with the Department of Social Development on the annual report before the committee compiles its report to Parliament. Honourable DG and COO and entities. Now, there is, just for committee members, Quality Secretary.
Yes, the apologies are from Honorable Nelson, Honorable Makasi, and Honorable Masilo. Thank you.
Just for members, Honorable Nelson had a new operation yesterday, so she's at home. She's going to be off until next week, Friday. I will now give over to the representative of the Auditor General's office to start with the presentation. Thank you very much. Over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. My name is Musa Songwa from the Auditor General. Of course, my colleague with me here, Abri Adendorf. We will be giving the short presentation on the audit of the 08-09 for the portfolio of social security. I believe you all have the handouts that have just been handed out to the members. If you go to page 2 of the handout, this is our reputation promise, or our mission, or our mandate, the mandate of the Auditor General. We exist to strengthen our country's democracy by enabling oversight, accountability, and governance in the public sector through auditing, thereby building public confidence.
Mr. Shlomo, could you raise your voice a bit?
Okay. Oh, if you go to page 2, that is our mandate, our mission. We exist to strengthen our country's democracy by enabling oversight, accountability, and governance in the public sector through auditing, thereby building public confidence. We include this mission in all our presentations to make sure that people understand us for who we are. If you go to the next page, page 3, we have listed the entities that we audit. We audit the Department of Social Development, the two entities, South African Social Security Agency, the National Development Agency, and then we've got the 5 funds which are responsible for relief or providing relief when there is a disaster. So basically it's the 2 entities plus 1 department and these small funds. If we go to the next page, That will give you the idea of the size of the entities that we audit in terms of the budget and in terms of the actual expenditure. That is the portfolio summary. We'll see that the department had a budget of about 611 million for the past year. The social assistance grants had a budget of 71 billion, which is quite a lot of money. The South African Social Security Agency, which is SASSA, had a budget of 4.6 billion. And then the National Development Agency had a budget of 166 million. We have excluded the funds because the funds are too small and there was hardly any movement during the year. So you can have an idea of the size of the entities that we deal with. If you look at the next page, that will give you a summary of the staff that is employed by the different entities and the department. The department had 684 approved establishment positions. SASA had 18,653, and the NDA, National Development Agency, had about 107 positions in the approved structure. This just gives you an idea, a broad overview of the department or the entities that we did the audit for. My colleague, Abby, will now take you through the audit outcomes for the past year for these entities.
Thank you, Musa. Thank you, Ms. Chair. If you look at slide 6, it's Department of Social Development. They got the unqualified opinion, and there was paragraphs that we find useful to emphasize. And it is a dual accountability that we'd like to emphasize here. Despite the fact that the grant expenditure being reported in the annual financial statements of the Department of Social Development, a dual accountability relationship exists between the Department of Social Development and SASSA over the grants. This was a decision by the Minister of Finance, and it is still so. So it is a very difficult position for us as auditors to audit the one place, but you report in the books of the another department on the grants expenditure. So actually what we're saying is SASSA had an impact on the audit report of the Department of Social Development regarding matters concerning grant expenditure, because SASSA is expensing the grants, but they're not taking the responsibility for the expenses. Other matters, and this is all social assistance grants matters, that is actually the execution done by SASSA, but because the money flows through social development's books, the responsibility for the grant administration and the payment of the grant resides in the South African Social Security Agency. And also with the relief of distress grants, we've listed some of the challenges that we come up with during the audit. I'm not going to read them all. You can have a look at it in your own time. Then on slide 8, social assistance grants, the responsibility for the grant administration and the payment of the grants resides at SASSA. Social assistance grant debtors, it's a problem for us. Repayments made by the grant debtors originated from the multiple sources. The people come and pay their debts, but there's no name connected to the payment. We don't know who paid it and for who was it paid and in which province. A single dedicated financial debtor system did not exist for the management of these grant debtors, and many of the recorded debtors may not be recoverable, or recovery may not be cost effective. Because to get a debtor paying back 300 rand or 1,000 rand, at the end of the day, which one is the best, to write it off or to try and get the 300 rand or the 1,000 rand from the poorest of the poor? Key governance responsibilities, slide 9. Financial statements were subject to material amendments resulting from the audit.
And the annual report was not submitted for consideration prior to the issuing of the auditor's report. If we go to slide 10, it is on SASSA. They also got an unqualified audit opinion, but then I must raise the matter that this opinion is actually on the administration of SASSA, because the reporting of the management of the grants was reported in social development books. So if we look at the emphasis of matter paragraphs that we've raised, it's the basis of accounting, entity-specific basis of accounting, and then the exception from having to prepare financial statements in accordance with South African Statement of Generally Accepted Accounting Practice and General Recognized Accounting Practice was granted by National Treasury on 31st of March 2009, and from this year they must now report against those standards. So that is a big challenge for them. Then there was irregular expenditure to the amount of 64 million. Was incurred as the proper tender process has not been followed, and also 69 million irregular expenditure was condoned during the financial year, which includes last year's irregular expenditure. Other matters that is a major concern for us, and this the SASSA will have to address for this coming year's audit, the asset register, the various points I'm listing there, and because they are now reporting on the accounting framework, this is going to have a major impact on the accrual-based accounting system, as this will require a physical stock take of all its assets to be undertaken, revalued, and taken into the new asset register. This must all be done before the 31st of March coming 2010. Other matters under SASSA, key responsibilities or key governance responsibilities, and also investigations that is going on at SASSA. They bought 40 mobile office units at the amount of 49 million, and an additional amount of 32 million was separately contracted to the same supplier for maintenance, bandwidth, and branding. And when we visited these mobile office units, we come to the conclusion that the maintenance contract is not fully complied with, and that the contractor who got the maintenance contract is not actually delivering as the contract is saying. So it's a non-compliance with the service level agreement, and which might result in fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And because of our audit, SASSA decided they will have a comprehensive internal investigation conducted. Then we go over to the National Development Agency, and their staff, key staff personnel is also present here, so this is also not new for them. They got the unqualified audit opinion. They got irregular expenditure to the amount of 2.5 million. Proper procurement process has not been followed. Non-compliance with the NDA Act. The NDA board does not consist of 5 members that represent government as requested by the NDA Act. And I think this specific section of the Act stipulates that 5 members must be from government so that they can look at the interest of government per se and not on the interest of the NDA. And as soon as a member is not of government, he must be paid by the NDA, and that also increases the costs of the NDA board. And then on page 14, their financial statements were also subject to material amendments resulting from the audit. Then maybe just the last comment on the NDA, a challenge for us this year. The CEO post is still vacant. It is a major challenge for the NDA to fill the post. The CFO post is still vacant. It's also a challenge. And it also reflects as a big risk for us as auditors that those two positions are still not filled after 3 to 6 months. The appointment of the CEO of the NDA is lying on the minister's table, and she hasn't made a decision yet. you look at the relief funds on slide 15, they all received unqualified audit reports with no emphasis and no other matters, because there was actually no movement on those funds. But it's actually also urgent for us that these funds must get now a resolution where they either get closed or that the social relief of distress bill is tabled so that they can make a decision where these funds must go. And the indication from the department is that they want to combine all these funds into one disaster fund. If we look at slide 16, we've audited performance information the past 3 years, but we haven't issued an audit opinion on it. There is the purpose why we audit performance information. This was a specific request from the Minister of Finance and the National Treasury to the Auditor General that we audit performance information. And from this year, we're going to issue an opinion in the management report, if you go to slide 17. So, and then from next year, in the 2010-11 year, we will give an audit opinion in the audit report. So this year, we're phasing it in as an opinion in the management report that will only go to the DG or the CEOs, but from next year, it will be in the, included in the audit report, and then it will be a public document and public audit report. Thank you, Ms. Chambers.
Madam Chair, I can just say one thing on the audit of performance information. We are not
issuing an opinion at this stage on that audit in terms of what Abby was saying, in terms of our phased-in approach, but we are going to start issuing an opinion from the year ended 31st March 2011. Next year, we are going to audit the performance information and only report in our management report. And for that purpose, it is important that the entities involved should be familiar with the reporting requirements. We have, from our Office of the Auditor General, given some presentations which have been attended by all the three entities, that is the Department, SASA and LDA, and we shall also be giving presentation in future just to help them also to understand what we shall be auditing during our audit of performance information. So by the end of the year 2011, we will be issuing two reports. That is one audit report on the normal financial information that we do issue, and then we shall issue another audit report also on the audit of performance information which relates to service delivery, which is very important for our people. Thank you, Manager.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Schlauer. Thank you. Honourable members, that's the input from the Auditor General's office. Is there any question on the presentation? Let me start off with the first round of questions. When is the department supposed to be ready with its interim financial statements for 2009 and 10 financial year? Do they submit interim financial statements to you before the finalization, before the deadline of 31st of May?
Madam, they don't have to present us with interim financial statements, but we are in the process of the interim audit, and we normally give out our interim audit or management report at the end of January, beginning of February. But we are in the planning and execution phase for the department. For SASA, we do not foresee that we will be able to start with the interim audit because of the moving over to a new financial system and the accrual accounting. They've got problems with the implemented Oracle system, and till up to this stage they haven't closed books for 1 month, so they are supposed to give us interim financial statements for the first 6 months, but for SASA they were not being able to. At the NDA, we have started with the interim audit yesterday at the NDA's offices, so we will also, we are on track, and we will most probably give out our management report at the end of January.
Honourable Member Lamula.
On what the gentleman just said for the report.
And actually, I would have loved to have this report a couple of hours before this meeting to really scrutinize. And I think none of us will be doing justice to what we need to ask on this report. I'm a bit upset about receiving a report like this on SASA. SASA is going for the past plus minus 3 to 4 years. And why only now are they at least finding that the financial system that they were using is not applicable or is not working properly? Why are they, that's my first and only question for now, why are they now shifting to a new financial system? Thank you. Thanks, Honourable Member Kelly. Thanks for the presentation. Thanks, Chairperson. My questions also are going back to be a few questions because it seems as if most of it, as there are so many problems in this report. Noting that at page 5, the staff establishment of SASA, which is noted that what makes it to, out of the approved establishment of 18.653, there are only 7,000. Which both failed, and then you said total vacancy of 10,000. What makes that difference? Maybe it is because that is why there's so much discrepancies. It's because of this small number that is employed. That also relates to page 11, page 7, where there are so many distribution of relief of aid is not performed well, including the supply chain management. Also, on the issue of NDA, NDA also has got problems, the office organogram, which is lacking. What makes these differences? Because nothing can be done if there are the establishment of the organogram is not up to standard. What makes these differences? Why are there so many vacancies in SASA and also in NDA? Thank you.
But I just want to ask on page 4, the surpluses and the deficit, is it because there was overspending, was the budget not enough, or on the other side, was the budget too much? I just want to do an explanation on why we have those differences there. And on page 8 also, on the grant data. I just want to know, maybe if we can just be brief there, what measures are in place to actually make sure that the funds are recovered from the debtors? I'll ask that for now. I think I've got more, but I'll ask later.
Okay, what I just want to caution you in this one. SASA made a presentation last week, and they presented, the Honourable Member wasn't there, it's fine, and they presented the responses to the audit report, and also they explained that explanation. So it's a bit unfair for the Auditor General's office to respond to some of those internal questions. But I'm sure that, I don't know, DG, do you have a rep of SASA with you today?
No, we do not have a representative of SASA here. In the first place, they weren't aware that the Auditor General's office has been invited. I mean, I'm not even sure whether the Auditor General is aware or expected that to be asked the kind of questions that have been posed, which are in fact meant for the entities themselves rather than the AG's office. But I can't speak for them. I'm sure they can speak for themselves.
No, I think the Auditor General will not be responding to issues that is not within the mandate. That is very clear. And the entities, we can hold those questions back when the entities make the presentation. But the questions will be pertaining to what we have in the presentation. Clearly understanding the role of the Auditor General in terms of the audit that has been conducted for the Social Development Board. But I'm sure, Honourable Member Makuba, we can make the presentation available to you as a member of this committee. There's just something that's bothering me or a concern, and I'm not sure whether the Auditor General can answer that question. Because I'd like to know whether it is a concern. It's still on the question that was asked by one of the members when it comes to, you know, seeing actually do performance information next year. Won't the staff establishment of SASA affect that? Because I think that's a fair question to you. And then the other one is the one on the surplus. Because according to SASA last week, when we spoke to them, they said that when it comes to social assistance grants, it's projected figures. So they won't be able, you know, they are projecting that amount there for the surplus. But to me as a member, they're supposed to be baseline figures. So I wonder if that is a concern to you too or not. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe some of the questions that were asked also, although we cannot answer on behalf of the department, some of them we can have some kind of input on that. Like the first one, which related to the new system that is now being used by SASA, why after all these years SASA is now using this new system. The first question that refers to the system that is now being used by SASA. Why did they change now after all these years? The new system is to enable them to comply with the new reporting standards, that is in terms of generally accepted accounting practice and also in terms of the generally accepted accounting practice. The old system that is used by departments cannot accommodate that kind of reporting. So they had to change so that they can be able to report as a public entity if required to, which in terms of the National Treasury, they are required to report in terms of the of generally accepted accounting practice. That is on that one question. The other one was on the vacancy situation, which like is 10,000 on SASA, which is a big figure. The vacancies are existing throughout the government in many departments, and yes, it is a problem, and it does make service delivery difficult. I think the department can explain better as to the reasons why there are such vacancies. Maybe my colleague would like to say something also on that one.
I think maybe we must just take into cognizance the fact that SASA is a public entity established to take up the roles and responsibilities that the 9 provincial departments of social development was doing. So it is an establishing agency. They now had their 3rd year running, so or 4th year running. So with the establishment, they were giving a 5-year period to get themselves established. So I think that is... the approved establishment is 18,000 to get everything up and running, but at this stage the total post full is 7,800, but I think it is a major challenge for them to get all the post full, and I think then if we link that to the performance information, as the posts are getting filled, their performance information and execution of their role will also be rolled out betterly, in a better manner.
I will also try to answer some of the other questions that NDA can answer on their organigram, because they are here. Overspending and underspending on page 4, I think those figures shows where it was overspent and underspent. The National Development Agency also overspent, SASA itself overspent, but on the grants, not all the grants was given out as projected, and also the department also underspent, but not to a great margin. And then on debtors, it is a challenge for the people to get the debtors in, and SASA had a workshop in, I think, in August or September with all the 9 provinces, where they put an action plan on the table of how they're going to address the debtor systems in the 9 provinces. And we as auditors are looking forward to see if that action plan is going into action before the end of March. I think that is what we can say from the Auditor General side. We will monitor their action plan during the audit.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. What I want to understand, I didn't hear correctly about that post of CEO or CFO. So I just want to understand if the auditors have seen, if there is any progress of maybe advertising, producing, or doing what. Is there any something, or did you recommend something to the department? Thank you.
I think the NDA is here. They can report on that.
Can we, Honorable Member Kupane? Thank you for the presentation. According to the presentation, there is a matter of concern here, an issue of governance and responsibility. It said that the annual report was not submitted for consideration prior to the issuing of the auditor report. Did you manage to get the reason why the report was not submitted to you? And my second question is on the social relief grant. One of the things on your document that was given to us previously is on the dormant account. Presently, it's about 1.3 billion that is on the dormant account. Did you try to manage, because it's from 2007, so did you manage to monitor the situation from that period to now? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. No. There is a slight confusion in slide 5, where we're talking about these posts that are there. But I believe the Auditor General really cannot answer this question. That's NDA and SASA answer all our concerns. Because here it is said all these posts are not funded, but are included in the annual report as part of the approved establishment of SASA. They need to give clarity about that, because they are there, if they are both there, but all the same they are not funded. So there is that confusion that we are having. There are no questions that I'm going to ask from the Auditor General. I will ask NDA in SASA. Thank you.
Easy question, Honourable Member. Just the last question. The posts that are reflected in the annual report is the approved establishment. Every department has to send the organogram for approval to say these are the people that we want on an establishment. But then, according to budget processes, these posts get funded. So what SASA did, they even included the unfunded posts into the annual report, which then had an impact in terms of the funded, the filled and unfilled posts in terms of the presentation, the percentages. So the percentage of unfilled posts would then be very much quite high in terms of because they've included the approved organogram and not what they need.
So this is actually a question that we should have posed to SASA, but I'm sure, DG, we can still do it. In terms of why is SASA not living with what they can afford than what they wish for, in terms of the reality of the budget that you have, because you have to live with what you can afford and not what you wish for, in terms of the reality of the allocation. So it actually looks really bad in terms of your annual reporting, but you still manage to perform fairly well, even though you have these huge percentages. So my question is your proof the Gannon plan not a wish list instead of being realistic to live within your budget? Wouldn't that be a better option to live, rather have an organogram that you can live with in terms of financial funds that you have available, than having approved organogram that is that you will never fill?
Is that important answer? Thank you, Madam Chair. There is an unwritten rule that your staff establishment, as you approve it, must be on the basis of available resources to fill those posts. And that rule is what the department follows, and I'm sure, I'm not sure to what extent the NDA does, but I'm sure that they, based on what I can see, they also follow a similar rule. But even in that instance, you do end up with a few posts still unfilled at the end of the financial year, for reasons other than the fact that there is no money to fund those posts, but rather for reasons related to the fact that the processes of recruitment in the public service are quite onerous, because it often takes no less than 3 months to fill a post, because there are requirements in terms of the law with regards to how many days a post at a certain level must be advertised for, in what kind of medium, and then the shortlisting processes and the interviewing, and especially people at the senior level. If you're recruiting someone, even from within government, they still have to give a month notice before they can transfer. So more or less, it takes about 3 months to fill a post, which means that even in those instances where you have funded posts, it is conceivable that you could reach the end of the financial year with some of them still unfilled. And I think your advice, Madam Chair, is quite correct, that it's most preferable that you don't bloat your staff establishment if you know that you don't have the money to fill those posts. Sometimes, even if you have the money, it's possibly good, if you know you don't have the capacity to fill those posts, not to pitch your staff establishment at that level. Otherwise, what you are able to do and what you wish to do are two different things. So I think it's probably best that we'll be more realistic. The COO office exercises oversight over SASA, and he would wish to add a comment or two to this matter.
Thanks, DJ. What we're also doing is engaging with SASA around whether you do need 18,000 people. And as you may recall that in our initial discussions with the minister, we said we're going to do a thorough business process review of SASA to look at what is the optimal institutional size that we need, because we do believe that, in fact, you can do more or you can be efficient without necessarily having a staff component of close to 20,000, because it is expensive. You're never going to find that, not in the next 10 years, actually, given the kind of budget constraints that we do have. So we are engaging with SASA around looking at efficiency gains, and that includes the restructuring of the way they do their work.
Any
have a question?
Honorable Chair, if I can respond to the question on the annual report not submitted for consideration prior to the issuing of the auditor's report. We issue our auditor's report in terms of the PFMA by the 31st of July. So at that time, the department had not submitted its annual report because they were still not ready. We did subsequently receive the annual report, which we did have a look at, but ideally, we should receive a report before we issue our audit report so that we can be able to see that it is not inconsistent with the information that we have audited in the annual financial statement, in the financial statement.
Just one question to the Auditor General's office. Are you satisfied with the role of the audit committee that they played?
I think for all three entities, Social Development and SASSA and NDA, we are indeed very much happy or satisfied with the audit committees. They are quite strong audit committees. The chairpersons of the three audit committees are very dedicated chairpersons, and there's a very good relationship between the Auditor General and the audit committees and internal audit of all three of these institutions.
Nina Kopane. Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe my question is not answered about the dormant accounts. Since the SASSA NDA, the books were audited, there was a dormant account from 2007. So how did you manage to make a follow-up regarding that? How did they,
Madam Chair, at this stage, I haven't got the detail of that one, but I will call my audit manager on that one and we can come back with an answer to you.
That response before the 17th of November, because that's when we have our last committee meeting. Thank you very much. Honourable members, that's... Is there any other questions from members? That brings us to the end of the report. All the meeting.
Madam Chair, Mr. Songwa has just made the point that by the time they compiled that report on the 31st of July, was it? The department wasn't as ready with the annual report. I realize that that statement might create the impression that the department was in violation of the law. Perhaps what Mr. Songwa omitted to mention is the fact that the deadline for the completion of the annual report is not consistent with the deadline by which they need to complete their own report, which means that we were still within the law, even if we were not ready by the 31st of July to make our annual report available to them, to still continue to do that work. I think our deadline is the 30th of September or August. So I thought I should make that point. September. 30th of September. So, yes, I just thought perhaps that the honourable members must not walk away with the impression that we were being tardy in finalising our annual report. Thank you.
Would you like to respond?
Madam Chair, I would not like to debate on this issue, but the date that the is talking about, that is the date of presenting, tabling in Parliament. Obviously, what you table in Parliament must have been audited, which means you must have submitted your annual report to us before the date that you mentioned.
I want to say we asked SASSA that question, and it's public knowledge, because within the audit report, it is ticked off as handed in late. There was a yes next to it, or a no, but I haven't got my report yet. But it's in the annual report, under the audit here. So we accept you that, as we say, thank you. The committee has spoken. Thank you very much, honourable members and the Office of the Auditor General, for this report. You're welcome to remain for the remainder of our meeting. We do members want a bit of a body break, or could we go straight into the next agenda of the NDA? Oh, the CDA. Okay. DG, CEO, we'll go straight into the Central Drug Authority. Honourable Member Mahat, do you want a body break? You're fine. Can we go over to the Central Drug Authority's presentation?
Doc.
Ah. Will you please introduce yourself?
Thank you very much. Honourable members, I am David Baber and I am the Deputy Chairperson of the Central Drug Authority. Our Chairperson, unfortunately, could not be present this morning and has delegated me to represent the Central Drug Authority. He is a member of International Relations and Coordination Department and as a member is very often out of the country. So, unfortunately, duty called on the other side and therefore I am presenting on his behalf. With his apologies. The presentation that we'd like to make is going to be dealt with in the following. Firstly, the purpose of the presentation, just so that members have a clear understanding of what the Central Drug Authority is, the powers and the functions as mandated within the Act, the different supporting structures of the Central Drug Authority, the National Drug Master Plan, which is our blueprint, and the implementation of the National Drug Master Plan based on the mandate that we are given within the Act. I would like to highlight the achievements of the Central Drug Authority and at the same time mention the challenges that we face and at the same time then thereafter make some recommendations as to how we are going to approach the challenges as well. So by way of introduction, if I may start, the purpose is to inform members of the Portfolio Committee on Social Development on the activities of the Central Drug Authority during the financial year 2008-2009. And right at the very outset, I would like to just, without going into too much detail, inform the members of the size and the enormity of the problem that we are facing in the country, so that we clearly understand the reason why we have certain concerns and why some of our recommendations are going to be made in terms of what we see as a way forward for ourselves. Some of those recommendations you'll find in our report on page 147 and 149. We also need to understand that there needs to be an emphasis on a change in focus in dealing with the problem of substance abuse. And that is not to look at the end result, but rather to look at what the causes are. The social and economic costs to the country could be better applied and better dealt with if we would only deal with the underlying problem. And I will explain this in more detail as we go along. The Central Drug Authority is a statutory body which is established in terms of the Act, Act 20 of 1992. This Act has been amended, although it has not been put into operation yet, as a result of the need for regulations still to be written. However, we were nominally an authority and still in practice remain as an advisory board, which is an issue that we would address within the new implementation of the new Act as well. The members of the Central Drug Authority are appointed by the Minister, and we consist of 12 persons from the private sector who are considered to be the experts from the field of substance abuse. And over and above that, we have 14 government departments and two entities represented on the Central Drug Authority, which highlights the importance of the understanding that government has of this not being a problem that can be dealt with solely by social development, but that needs to be dealt with by all government departments, and that their impact can help and assist us in dealing with the problems as well. Our structure within the department are four members of the Secretariat, and we are a sub-directorate of the Directorate of Substance Abuse and the CDA in the National Department of Social Development. In terms of the Act, we are asked to give effect to the National Drug Master Plan. And in looking at giving effect, means that we should make this happen. At the end of the day, that is what we are there for, in order to then, having adopted the National Grid Master Plan as the blueprint for the country, we are the people that are going to have to make this, in fact, happen. We are also required to advise the minister on any matters affecting the abuse of drugs. And in that regard, I must make reference to the fact that the new Act requires regulations to be written, and we would like to assist wherever possible. And this is an offer that we are making as representatives from the CDA, from entities outside of government, though, to utilize our ability to be able to assist in the drafting of the new regulations in order to ensure that this happens in the shortest possible time. We also are asked to plan, coordinate, and promote measures relating to the prevention and the combating of drugs and the treatment as well. In this regard, I again refer to the fact that this... Sorry?
Could we stop you there?
Sure.
This annual report has been tabled late in Parliament.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there's no apology to the committee on the late tabling or any explanation in your presentation?
Sorry.
Are you coming to that?
Yes. That will be dealt with by the department, yes.
Okay. I would rather...
Do you want to take
before we continue, it is just the explanation.
Sure.
Before we continue with the presentation. Did you plan to do that?
Sorry, thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Mabetwa will assist with that. If need be, she will be supported by our parliamentary officer, Ms. Peterson.
Madam Chair, the CDA annual report is, as you said correctly, it is late. On the 8th of June in ATC number 9, the department has tabled the 2007-2008 annual report. By the just before the elections, Minister Skweyiya has drafted a letter to the former speaker advising her of the potential late tabling of the report and requesting permission to table it officially in the fourth parliament, because parliament would have, the report was ready at that stage, but the timing of it was in such a way that the report would have been referred, but it would have rested, there wouldn't have been a committee that would have dealt with the report technically. So after the new parliament has been congregated, the department has tabled the 7 and 8 report on the 8th of June 2009, and there is a letter of explanation which the minister has signed, which will be tabled this afternoon. It's just that I'm not in a position to table the explanation without the bulk of the copies of the annual report. So we are tabling the annual report for the CDA 2809 on the 11th of November, and the reasons of explanation will be published in full in the ATCs of Parliament. And I gave Zola a copy of the letter for your information. The department can explain the reasons as to why, what the delays were with design and so forth. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. The delay was caused by the fact that due to financial constraints, we had to use, you know, the designers in the department and for the printing of the to prepare for the printing of the report. So that was because we had to do it within the communication section of our department, that caused the delay. We also, I think within the CDA itself and the secretariat, the report was quite late for the final preparation and the editing of it. Thank you.
Express an opinion on the matter? Well, we're going to keep it, we're going to stand up. Honorable Member Marcus.
Chairperson, I'm just looking at the program of this afternoon. The only thing that I see of social development here is the report of SASA, the visit. So I think when our officials speak, they're under oath in this meeting. And we must make sure that it is what the official is saying. Thank you. Because there's nothing of social development on the program. Thank you. Announcements on the order paper, Honourable Member. Announcements and tabling. There are announcements and tabling, but now what we got here is only consideration of the report of the PC on social development on oversight of the agency, the pipeline, announcing and tabling 29th October. Nothing more, thank you.
Can also take place by delivering it to the Speaker's office or the clock spaces in this regard. So that takes care of the tabling. And say it has been tabled, although late, and I think the committee should take note of that. I think what we should say that the next annual report, the tabling should take place in the required legal framework, because this is obviously non-compliant. Please continue. We'll discuss the matter later as a committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I accept the explanation. Thank you very much. I was mentioning the fact that we plan, coordinate, and promote measures in order to deal with the problem that we have. And just to outline that the strategy that we have adopted here in South Africa is to use a three-tier approach, namely demand reduction, supply reduction, and recognizing that in spite of the fact that these have been used over the past number of years, that there are still those who fall through, that we need to have a policy on harm reduction as well. But I must emphasize the fact that the harm reduction as a new approach is something that needs to be contextualized purely in respect of the South African situation, and that we are not going to be adopting policies or programs from other countries. We will have to look at it in terms of what our specific needs are for our country and deal with it as that approach. For the best in our country. Further, we review the National Drug Master Plan every 5 years, which is then submitted to Parliament for approval, and the Cabinet, having adopted that, use that as the blueprint. We also report to Parliament on progress in combating substance abuse and arrange conferences and summits for combating substance abuse, exercising such powers and perform such duties as may be determined from time to time. The composition, as I mentioned, made up of 12 nominated members, each for a 5-year period, as well as representatives from the different government departments. And you can see there that essentially each one of them have a role to play. It's not only social development that is fighting this scourge, but that every one of the other departments can, within their own mandate, have a look at ways and measures and means to assist in the eradication of the scourge that is facing the department, the government. The National Drug Master Plan 2006-2011 provides for an analysis of the drug problem and the trends. However, what I must say is at the outset that unfortunately we need to broaden the scope of the analysis that needs to take place, and I will deal with that shortly. It also deals with the social, health, and socioeconomic consequences of substance abuse. And here I want to mention again that there is a common thread that runs through all of the social ills that we have and that we are facing in the country, and that is the reason why we need all of the government departments to assist us. If we could rather concentrate on the causes of the problem rather than the symptoms that we are trying to deal with at the moment, we would be able to make a far bigger impact in limiting the amount of wasteful expenditure on having to deal with the end result of the initial problem. We need to start looking at identifying what the causes are. And you'll find that within each of the different departments, there is a contribution that they can make by looking at what it is that is leading to the problem of substance abuse. The guidelines and priorities and frameworks for action in combating substance abuse. And that is the reason why we look at the role of the different government departments and how they should prevent and combat substance abuse, because in that way we will be able to start dealing with the causes and that common thread. Irrespective of what the issue is, you'll find that it is all related and it is a correlation between the problems that are faced within the other departments and the problem that we are facing and trying to deal with here, which is substance abuse. We also need to monitor and evaluate the different programs that are being developed and adopted. In order to implement the National Drug Master Plan, we have established 9 provincial substance abuse forums, one for each of the provinces. We require 238 local drug action committees to be established because those are the very people who at the grassroots level are facing and having to deal with the problems within the communities. And without their support, we will not be able to infiltrate right down to the lowest level. We need the support of the people on the ground at the local level to deal with the problem. And that uses the non-governmental organizations who are therefore involved in the combating of substance abuse. In order to make this happen, we have assisted in the development and the coordination of both national departmental mini drug master plans, which should be a mirror image of what the national master plan is at a provincial level as well and at a departmental level. The CDA also provides support and communication monitoring and evaluation needed to achieve the results that we are talking about. And in that regard, we have availed ourselves to make things happen at a local level by running workshops, helping them to build capacity in order to be able to deal with the problems. We are also advising them on how to develop their own drug master plan to deal with the problems in their specific regions and in their specific areas, because it changes from one area to another. And we have assisted them and run workshops right throughout the country. Unfortunately, there are too many places that we have to get to, and our time is limited. But that we are committed to doing this in order to make the local drug action committees functional and in order to make it work is the message that I want to bring across. So if you have a look at our organogram, the support structures, you'll see that Central is the Central Drug Authority with the National Drug Master Plan, which is an outcome and operational action plan for the future 5 years. Taking direction from the minister as well as the public. And it's through the local drug action committees and the NGOs and their representation at the provincial level that we get the input from the public as to what it is that we need to be dealing with, as well as the departmental inputs as well. Based on that, we have the 9 provincial substance abuse structures, which work in close cooperation with the 328 local drug action committees, and they are made up of representatives from within the regions of the NGOs and the communities that they service. At the same time, the National Drug Master Plan, being the blueprint for the country, needs to be replicated within each of the departments, and for that reason, we have the mini drug master plans developed for each of the government departments, and we have again assisted them in developing their mini drug master plans and continued to assist them. What is important, though, is that we have the implementation from the various government departments of the mini drug master plans that have been developed in order to make the approach to the problem more comprehensive and in order to be able to deal with it. Our achievement then is that we have established a national database on substance abuse, and this was necessary because of the fact that the reporting mechanisms and the tools that we have at the moment do not give us a broad enough perspective of what the problem is. The data has been populated, and we are using information from 18,000 different journals, which unfortunately do not deal with substance abuse as a problem of social development only, but is made up of a multifaceted approach within each of the different structures. And we are looking to be able to put this onto the database in order to make it as a reference source and in order to be able to then monitor the progress that is being made. We have also developed a national clearinghouse and a website where the books have been bought, catalogued, and are part of the department's library. And this is going to be made available, is being made available, right down to the most remote and rural areas in order to be able to give them the ability to have the references that are necessary in order to fight the problem and deal with the problems that they are looking at. Each of the 9 provinces has now established their provincial substance abuse forums, and there are at the present moment 185 local drug action committees that have been formed of the 328 that are required. So we are well on our way to reaching our target, although it still looks like there's a large amount of work to be done. We are committed to make this whole process happen. We have also developed a position paper on cannabis, which is still at this point in time being consulted in 2 of the provinces before it can be finalized. And this will be made as a paper which will then be presented to Parliament. What is of importance is that we understand that the reason why we have done this is because we are seeing internationally that there is a large movement towards legalization and decriminalization of cannabis as an example. We need to recognize that the problem that we have here in South Africa is very different to the same problem that they are facing in other parts of the world. The consumption of dacha in South Africa, cannabis, marijuana, doesn't matter. We are sitting at a situation where 9.2% of our population use or abuse this particular drug, whereas the world norm elsewhere is only at about 4%. So the problem that we have here in South Africa is more than double what it is in the rest of the world. And for that reason, we have to have a policy which fits the needs of this country rather than just following the example of other countries. And that is the reason why we have gone to the trouble of consulting right down to the most rural of areas in order to get the opinion of the very people that we are looking to service and to get their opinion incorporated in the position paper that we will be putting to Parliament in order to adopt a policy for the future as well. Preparations are at an advanced stage for the conducting of a baseline research study on the nature and the extent of the problem. This is outlined on page 151 of the report that has been presented to you. And the reason for this is because the data that we are using at the moment does not reflect the true situation. We are dependent on information that we have been able to gather, which is based mainly on those people who have already acknowledged the fact that they have a problem and that are in the process of being treated in rehabilitation centers. This needs to be extrapolated further, or rather investigated further, because at the moment we can only extrapolate, and we would have to multiply the actual figure by a factor of 9 or 15 in order to get to the true figure of how bad the situation is. And certainly what we have seen from the type of reporting that we have, based on UNODC, based on our SAPS reports, based on SARS reports, is that the situation is very, very serious. If we have a look at, for example, our cocaine consumption, where the world norm is at 0.4%, cocaine in South Africa is at 0.8%, again, double the world norm. So we have a situation in the country which is desperate and needs to be addressed. Preparations for the hosting of the second biennial summit is well in an advanced stage at the moment, and we are looking at the capacity building of the support structures, which is, as I mentioned before, the reason for our roadshows, both to government departments, both to the provincial administration, and to the local drug action committees, in order to help them to develop the necessary strategies and programs to deal with the size of the problem that we are recognizing. And this is the reason why, as representatives from the NGOs, the 12 representatives sitting on the Central Drug Authority, we have recognized how big the problem is, and we have recognized that as part-time employees, we are not in a position on our own to be able to deal with the problem being the size that it is. And that's the reason why we have asked that we have a look at the structuring. So we are securing government department representation on the CDA to ensure the attendance of the meetings and the involvement of the various departments and the development of their mini drug master plans. Without their assistance, the problem is too great for us to deal with in social development alone. We also need to correct the non-uniform reporting systems and the countering the lack of commitment. What we have seen at the moment is that there are representatives who are appointed by their own departments to attend and be representative on the Central Drug Authority, but unfortunately they do not have within the mandate from their own departments the instruction to deal with it as we would like them to deal with. But that there's this common thread that runs through all of the departments is what we need them, and we need to get them to understand in order for us to be able to deal. We have to improve the paucity of the data that is available, and that is the reason for the establishment of the database where we will populate it with information from a huge selection of journals which are internationally acclaimed and will give us the necessary information, as well as doing a baseline study in order to recognize the problem as it is and therefore monitor the improvements as a result of the methods and the policies that have been developed. We also need to rectify the inadequate administrative and financial resources which carry the mandate of the CDA because of the fact that we have other countries recognizing the need for a greater involvement in dealing with the cause rather than the symptom of substance abuse, and that we need to start following and adopting the same approach is what we are trying to promote here. The need for the appointment of a full-time capacity CEO in order to help and assist the mandate of the CDA in order to deal with the size of the problem, and recognizing from our local level how big the problem is. The desirability of reviewing the structure and the staffing of the secretariat and the seconding of selected personnel is an issue that we have recommended. Further departments are required in terms of the Prevention and Treatment of Drug Dependency Act to prioritize the nomination of members to the CDA so that those people who are representative of the various departments sitting on the CDA are more committed to dealing with the problem and are at the level where they can help assist in developing policy rather than just attending the meetings and reporting back and then having no authority in order to implement some of the strategies that we have asked for to be implemented. We need an integrated strategy in order to be able to deal with the problem. And we have in the past gone to the various departments where we have approached ministers, DGs, and other key personnel within the departments and the policymakers to assist us and to make sure that the representatives from the various departments on the CDA are more effectual and effective in their dealings with the problems. The Provincial Substance Abuse Forums and the Local Drug Action Committees, as I said earlier, should be a replica of the national department, and the departments represented in the CDA, the Provincial Substance Abuse Forum and the Local Drug Action Committees, should be tasked formally by their relevant authorities to develop their small adaptations to the National Drug Master Plan. And again, I would like to just emphasize that we have availed ourselves and made ourselves available to be able to assist all of the various departments in the development of the mini drug master plans. The National Drug Master Plan vision of a drug-free society can be attained only if all the departments and other stakeholders listed in the National Drug Master Plan participate actively and together endeavor at a national level, together with the CDA, at the provincial level, and at a municipal level to fulfill their role in the struggle against substance abuse, which I have just illustrated as being a major concern in terms of the size of the problem. In conclusion, ladies and gentlemen, the CDA being a statutory authority with dedicated members mandated to give effect to the National Drug Master Plan, which has been approved by Cabinet for combating substance abuse and also meets the requirements of the three United Nations Conventions on Drug Abuse, works together with the Provincial Substance Abuse Forums and the Local Drug Action Committees, and there are three key elements of this integrated strategy that has been adopted, and that is demand, supply, and harm reduction. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. At this stage, I would like to recognize the presence of the Honourable Deputy Minister. Minister, welcome to this Portfolio Committee meeting. Honourable Members, there you have the presentation by the Central Drug Authority. Any questions? Let me start off the round of questions. Are you also going to compile a database of registered and
unregistered drug treatment centre. So let me call it let's leave the registered out. Let's talk about the unregistered drug treatment centres. As a central drug authority, are you keeping pace or keeping up with the blossoming of these treatment centres in our country? Secondly, what's your relationship with the no-port centre? It's like a thorn in the side of the, when it comes to drug treatment centres. Well, not one of your best practice models in the country. Has the authority discussed the issue of no-port practices and its impact that it's having on its patients? And coming to cannabis, I think that's an interesting. I would like to see that report. I'm sure the committee members would see cannabis, Odaha, marijuana. You've got quite a lot of names for it, but it's the same thing. Also, maybe you get lots of varieties of it. It's like that. Right? You get quite a lot of varieties of it. Cultivars. But can you just tell me what the central drug authorities take on him in the country? And then just the issue around cut. I think I've missed that. Cut is a Somali drug, isn't it? Cut. Yeah, K-H-A-T. And wherever we have a presence of Somalians in our country, we have cut. And in the province where I come from, it has destroyed many lives. But it doesn't seem as if the police and the community is really getting their hands on the problem itself. And when you look at the drug rehabilitation centers or the treatment centers throughout the country, government is not very much committed in building these centers. In the Northern Cape, there's none. Mpumalanga, there's none. Provinces send the people with the problems to other provinces. So the Western Cape has been, I'm sure Honourable Amula will be interested in that, has been recipients of the Eastern Cape and the Western Cape patients, and the Free State as well, honest from the Kopane. And we know that the Eastern Cape is struggling with its own challenges. And then Gauteng is, I'm sure, is also buckling under the burden of other provinces. So can you just give us your comments, yourself and your team, on those issues, those challenges facing us? Yeah. Is there any other members? Honourable Member Kenya, Namula, Tweta?
Thanks for the presentation. Can you share this? My question is on page 8, slide number 15. As you say that in the last bullet, that is this. One of the first challenges is to correct the uniform reporting system and covering the lack of commitment and non-submission of reports. What mechanisms, therefore, noting that the situation is dead, what mechanisms, therefore, are in place? That how do you discipline those who are lacking commitment in this department, which is so crucial, and then also correcting this non-uniformity of reporting. Then my other question is, are there any permanent counselling sessions and involvement of social workers so as to lead these programs, noting that really, as you say, that it's to treat the cause is more necessary, more than to treat what you don't know, because there are many challenges that makes this drug abuse being so prominent to our communities, which are different. If therefore can tell me if there are any counselling sessions which are permanent, led by the social workers. So thank you.
Thank you, Chair. On page 5, I'd like to know if you do agree that the main causes or the main reason why people go on to drug abuse, and I sincerely like you highlighting that issue. Do you agree that, or do you disagree that it is the poverty, education and unemployment that drives people to drug abuse? And then my second question is the impact of drug abuse on the World Cup. What is your idea or opinion on that one? That is the second one. And then the rural areas, challenges concerning the rural areas, especially with the lack of social workers in our area. Can you elaborate more on that one? And are there any projects in our areas? Because, you know, drug abuse is now even on our farming areas. And I'm experiencing that now lately. Really, it is a very worrying factor. And then on page 9, bullet 17, was there any reason or is there any reason for not appointing a full-time CEO? Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I also want to thank the presenter for the very informative presentation. My first question was asked by Honorable Kelly around commitment. I want to add to say if departments don't submit their reports, I think it's very difficult for you to get the database of numbers of people that are affected if they don't submit their reports on time. What do you do then? Now, you've mentioned page 4 that the composition of the board, you have a board that has 12 related members as experts in the field. And I want to check the term of office of the board, term of office of the board, because they should play a role in terms of assisting you on a report, submission of a report by the department. Then you started by saying page 5 that the local drug action committees are to be established. And I found it very contradictory when you were giving us the organogram that says you have a local government drug in the organogram. If you have to establish, which ones are those? Or you have an organogram, but maybe you don't have those local authorities. And the last question, Chair, is around the drug abuse is affecting children most of the time, though even adults are also part of. But I think people that are more affected parents to their children. Whether amongst these local committees you have the people that have an experience of having children taking this drug abuse so that they do assist. And thank you, Chair, those are my questions that I have. Was the full-time CEO question is asked already. Thank you.
Other members? I've noticed some other members in there.
Thank you, Chair. In the organogram, the NGOs and the communities are the last. And seemingly they are not involved in the first the top people who are discussing this program. And yet they are the most affected people, especially children, I mean, yeah, youth and women. Because in South Africa we can see that mostly there are women-headed families. Now, at the end of the day, the woman is the victim. And when we were busy strategizing, doing whatever, they have to be involved. They are the people who know why is the rate of this drug abuse so high. And number two, the problem of the rehab centers. When you talk of the rural areas, there's just nothing known as that. And as such, it's where most kids come from. They come from the rural areas to the townships and then to town. And those people, I advise that they should be involved in your organogram, at least in the middle part of it. And lastly, Chair, the composition of the book. These are mostly experts. And those NGOs, part of the NGOs, should be part of them. So people who are working with the people there at the grassroots, I think, I'm trying to summarize what I'm saying. I think. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. According to the, I'm happy for the presentation, but there are challenges that have been highlighted. The first one is the first phase of drug changes, the supply expanding to the rural areas and few service providers. Even the department on board need a greater capacity. Are there any plans that you are going to do to rectify those challenges? And the other thing, could you please raise your voice? I think the acoustic in the side. The second question, I just wanted to find out, did you make any study or any research regarding the impact of the drugs in South Africa? Because apparently it seems that in South Africa we are the most problematic one, or we are the most people that are facing problems regarding the drugs. The recent studies that we have made regarding that. And somehow, I don't see where you indicate your funds. How do you manage to do all this?
Thank you. Are you finished? Anyone else? Honorable Members Makuba, can I just say,
Thank you, Chairperson. So some of my questions have been taken by the other members. I just want to find out. Thank you, actually, for the report. But the local drug action committees, are they the ones that are supposed to be implementing at local level? If so, is there any program that you have with regard to the schools? Because I think that is where the drug problem is, where we're having a serious drug problem, be it of alcohol and drugs at the same time.
Thank you,
Linda.
I think you just bring to members' attention, and maybe let me ask the presenter just to reiterate it. So just clarify the role of the Central Drug Authority vis-a-vis the land function social development department.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My task here to answer all the questions is rather large, and I'm going to ask for assistance from other members as well to please give input wherever they feel necessary, and I will try and attempt to answer as many as I can. In terms of the line function and the structure of the Central Drug Authority, let me just point out at the outset that the 12 representatives that are appointed as the experts are drawn from the NGOs, from academia, and those are the people that are representatives of what is actually happening at a grassroots level as well. Of those 12 experts, a majority of them are representatives from the communities as members of NGOs that have been recognized and appointed to the Central Drug Authority. So we do have representation from a local level as well, sitting at the top in structure. However, you'll see that over here, the slide that I've highlighted, we have as our prime priority the taking of public input right at the very top. And that is addressing the question that was asked in terms of, are we really getting to the needs of the people in the most remote corners of the country as well? And are we being cognizant of the needs of the NGOs operating at the lower levels? So while the NGOs might be shown over here at the bottom, I must point out that the reason for us having put it right at the very top is because we recognize the importance of taking the public's inputs, the very mothers and parents and families that are affected by this huge scourge that we're dealing with, has been identified as a major priority in terms of the structure that has been developed. Unfortunately, the 12 representatives that we have from the NGOs or from the community are all sitting there in a part-time capacity, and they also have other functions to perform. They also have other jobs that they are having to deal with. Also, the people within the government departments that are appointed as the 16, 14 departments, two entities that are represented on the Central Drug Authority, also have their own separate mandates from their own departments to deal with certain problems. But if I may, in response to the question that was asked a minute ago, in terms of, are we dealing with the problems at the schools, for example, and I just use that to highlight. Here again, we need the education department to assist us in order to be able to deal with that problem. We don't have the capacity within social development or within the Central Drug Authority. We don't have the resources, we don't have the manpower, we don't have the capacity, we don't have the funding in order to be able to deal with it. So therefore, that is the reason why within the National Drug Master Plan, the identified roles of the various government departments has been prescribed for them as well, in order for them to assist us in dealing with the whole problem. The problems that, the concerns that you have raised are the very issues that we are trying to deal with. The biggest problem though that we have is that those people that are appointed by the various government departments don't have the necessary mandate from their own department to deal with it. They're not in the capacity to be able to be policy makers, and they can only report back in the hope that their department will adopt some of the recommendations that we are making. We need to strengthen that. Fortunately, Madam Chair, if I may say, the new Act has addressed a lot of those problems as well, in terms of the fact that it has been strengthened within the new Act on what the different roles are and the reporting mechanisms that have to be reported. The dates, the deadlines have been prescribed now in the new Act as well, which hopefully will also address the concern of the non-compliance of certain departments. If you have a look on page 86 of the report, you'll see that we've actually shamed and named those departments who have not submitted their reports in time. I know that some of the reporting that I'm doing now is in answer to some of the questions, but I hope it highlights the point that you are asking in terms of the line function that we have. As the Central Drug Authority, we are dependent on the department to have people available in order to perform the necessary functions. As at the present moment, they are a sub-directorate, and that needs to be addressed in order to make them more effective. But I'll ask the department themselves to answer on that score, because they know exactly how it functions within the department. Shall I carry on with some of the other replies then? Do you want to add from the department on terms of the structure?
Okay, thank you very much. The original understanding or arrangement in terms of the structure of the CDA within the department was that the CDA, the secretariat which is supporting the CDA, will be located within the Chief Directorate Social Crime Prevention, and with the support of the Chief Director Social Crime Prevention. However, towards the end of last year, we received a request. The department received a request from the CDA requesting that a new structure for the CDA be established, and
the positioning of the CDA in the department be considered or reconsidered. The department received that request, and in the ESCO of the department, it was decided that we need to evaluate the work of the CDA in the department first. We have appointed the service provider who is doing currently that before we can reconsider the new structure and the location of the CDA in the department. We hope that by the end of this year that we'll have that report and we'll take it from there on. Because another challenge was the funding, because they're requesting that we have a person at the level of the chief director to be at the head of the CDA secretariat in the department. The department didn't have funding at that time to immediately appoint such a person or to create such a post. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I then can just start reporting on some of the questions, and apologies if I repeat some of the answers that I might already have alluded to. You asked about the registration and the unregistered rehabilitation centres, or the registration of the unregistered rehabilitation centres. I made reference to the fact that the Act, the new Act that we will be seeing implemented, will address a lot of the problems, and that has been corrected in the new Act. However, in order for that to happen, we have to have the regulations ready in terms of the needs that we have in order to be able to address the problems that we have, for example, with no quit. Until the regulations are ready, and that is the reason why we are trying to emphasize the urgency to have the regulations written as soon as possible to be able to address the problem. We, as the Central Drug Authority, would ideally like to be able to do our own audits of these centers to ensure that the abuse that takes place within some of these centres, without mentioning any in particular, in general, we are well aware of, and we need to be able to identify those problems. And the only way that we will be able to do that is by doing audits at the various centres, unannounced, monitoring, in order to see that the best practices are only being used, and to limit the amount of abuse that actually takes place. But this requires the regulations to be completed, and that is the reason for the urgency and the offer that is made from some of the experts to say, can we please assist in order to make this happen as soon as possible. NOPWIT, as being an identified problem area, is something that has been addressed and is being addressed by the department, and I would prefer that they answer those particular questions themselves. It is something that is continuously being investigated. In terms of the current Act as it is, I know that the hands are tied, and that again brings me to the point where the new Act needs to be implemented as soon as possible in order for us to be able to address it. But the reporting on NOPWIT, I would ask the department themselves to report on.
Important question. I was asking, do you have any relationship as a Central Drug Authority? I know the role of the department.
Okay. Sorry. As I said, as the current situation, we do not have a relationship with NOPWIT, because the mandate that we have doesn't allow us to actually go and do the necessary investigations at that level. This hopefully would be addressed then with the new regulation. That's why I keep bringing that up as the issue. In terms of cannabis and the cannabis paper, hopefully once we have been able to consult with all the 9 provinces, this will be presented to you, recognizing that what we are talking about here is a very different need to what the needs are in other parts of the world. I must just mention to the members that cannabis grown here in South Africa has got a far higher content of the active ingredient which causes all the problems associated with cannabis. Our THC content of cannabis grown in South Africa is 10 to 15% higher than those grown in other parts of the world. And we also have the establishment of hydroponic industries around cannabis cultivation as well. So the problem is different in terms of the type of problem that we're dealing with is not the same problem that has been dealt with in other parts of the world. And that's why we need to have a paper for our own country which deals with our own particular need. The industry around hemp is something that we are rather concerned about, because we believe that there needs to be a lot more investigation into some of the active ingredients which can be extracted. And while we recognize that we need to have something that we can replace the crop and cultivation of cannabis in order to make sustainable income available to those farmers And if hemp is the answer, before we embark on that, we need to have more thorough investigation into the actual active ingredients associated with hemp. But certainly that we need to have something to replace that industry with, we understand, and that there could be the use of hemp. I'm not sure, though, whether we are going to be able to monitor the legal cultivation of hemp and at the same time the illicit cultivation of ordinary cannabis in between. We already have a problem with cannabis being grown amongst mealies and other crops. How much more difficult is it going to be for us to then regulate the industry around hemp when the different types available are so similar, and will we be able to monitor it? I have my doubts. Talking about CAT, I think we need to recognize that what we're talking about here when we're talking about CAT is something that is expanding at an alarming rate. The Cata edulis plant, which is where the CAT is extracted from, is being grown, and we are now aware of that. Unfortunately, I'm not sure if our law enforcement agencies are in a position to be able to recognize the plant in the first instance, whether they're going to be able to eradicate it. But certainly what we have seen is that there are a number of farmers who are now cultivating the Cata edulis plant in order to propagate the use of CAT as being another amphetamine-type substance and stimulant that is being sold, and that has caused tremendous harm in other parts of Africa. Other parts of Africa are exporting the CAT to European countries. The fact that it's now grown here is of major concern, because in order for it to be used appropriately, it needs to be fresh. And that is the reason why they're now growing it here, so that it can be used while it's still fresh. When it is cultivated in other parts, in the northern parts of Africa, eastern parts of Africa, it is sent refrigerated over to the European market, so that when it's bought there, it is still fresh. Here, we are allowing it to be cultivated within our own borders, and therefore will be available to be used fresh, which then heightens the problem that we have around CAT, and is certainly an area that we are concerned about. It's all emphasizing the need for more research and more education programs to go out in order to capacitate those people that we are entrusting to enforce supply and demand reduction to be able to deal with the problem appropriately. And that, again, impacts on the ability of the Central Drug Authority in terms of the capacity that we require to deal with the problem further. The question of the non-submission of the reports by various other departments. As I said, in our report that you have in front of you on page 86, we have highlighted those departments. We send out numerous requests to the various departments. We have representatives sitting on the Central Drug Authority who we appeal to make sure that the reports are ready in time, and unfortunately this is still a problem. The way that we intend to deal with this is to ask our minister to kindly assist us in giving a directive to the various other departmental ministers in order to ensure that the necessary reporting takes place. The new Act also prescribes the time frames which are required for the department, which has been lacking in the existing Act. So hopefully with the new Act again, that will help to address that problem as well. We also need the development of a database tool in order for that reporting to be made easier, and that might be one of the reasons why there is this lack of reporting. With the development of the database, we are also creating a tool whereby we will be asking the appropriate questions in order for them to be able to give us the appropriate information, which we will then incorporate into our annual report. And that is the reason why the database is so essential for us as well. And hopefully that will also then assist in reducing the number of non-submissions by other departments, as well as provincial and NGOs, local drug action committees. Again, the education that is going out to the social workers and the people involved in the actual field, make reference to the new Act, which will also regulate the type of people that are being employed and the need for them to be recognized as experts within the field. We have a lot of institutions as rehabilitation centers having been developed by previous users who now feel that they're in a better capacity or in a better position to be able to deal with the problem without any formal recognition of the training that they might have or have not had, and without the registration of those practitioners the new act again makes provision for that, that these rehabilitation centres will only be able to register if they have the appropriate recognised qualified staff dealing with the problem. We cannot allow these people who are ex-users now putting themselves out as experts, not even knowing how clean or for how long they have been able to abstain themselves, but that they see this as an opportunity for themselves to involve in an industry which is very lucrative for them, is going to be to the detriment of the patient that they will be dealing with because of no formal standards being applied, and that is being addressed in the new Act, again emphasizing the need for this to become operative as early as possible. The question as to what is the main cause of substance abuse. I think that we need to look at this as a level of, it's a multifaceted and a multi-sectorial biopsychosomatic problem that we have. It involves the psyche, it involves the person, it involves the society, it involves the environment, it involves everything, and we need to be able to deal with those issues appropriately. Certainly, poverty does have an impact. But what is it that makes poor people poorer is their very involvement in substance abuse. So however bad the situation was in the beginning, they now start using the drug in order to help them deal with their problem, or they resort to other unregulated practices, such as, for example, prostitution, which brings with it another problem, and that is the effect of the substances that they then indulge in, which makes them poorer and exacerbates the initial problem. And that's why we said there is a common thread that runs through all of the crimes, the issues, the social ills that we're having to deal with. If we have a look at crime and the correlation between substance abuse and crime, once people have developed that need to use a particular drug, they have to be able to sustain their habit. That requires money. They're not capable of holding down a job because they're using substances of abuse. And therefore, the only thing that they can revert to is crime in order to fund their habit. It's a vicious circle. It's a spiral that once they get hooked, and the problem that we have is that these people are introduced to these drugs because they're made available to them at the earliest possible time, knowing full well that making it available to them, even if it's beyond credit, they will then become addicted and therefore will carry on having to use the drugs. And that is what supports the dealers and the people who are involved in this industry, the second biggest industry in the world that we are having to deal with. Now, if we have a look at the size of the industry and the impact that it has on our GDP, the GDP in South Africa and the ills associated with substance abuse at 6.4%, 50% of that could be used far better if we could deal with this issue of the cause of the problem. And the question that you've asked is absolutely correct. Which is it the chicken or the egg situation? Well, there isn't a single simple answer to it, but certainly what we are seeing is that there is a common thread that runs through all of the social ills in the country. And with our GDP, 6.4, 50% of that is wasted on the need to then address the problems that are caused in terms of the families that are affected by it, in terms of the hospital bills that are associated with it, in terms of the incarceration of people as a result of having committed crimes which they would not otherwise have been able to commit if it wasn't for the fact that they were inebriated or intoxicated or under the influence of drugs in the first place. It's a huge social problem that we have as well. The rural areas and the capacity that is required in that rural area, certainly this is a need. What we have seen is in the new Act that there will be the establishment of at least one rehabilitation center in each of the provinces, rather than the concentration of centers in some of the provinces only and no rehabilitation facilities in other provinces. The new Act again makes provision for the establishment of at least one in each of the provinces. So certainly a move in the right direction. What we need to do is to ensure that that Act becomes operative as soon as possible, which requires the regulations to be finished as soon as possible as well. And that will help to address the needs in the rural areas as well. The capacity building in the rural areas is an issue that we have taken the road shows to as much as we can with our limited resources, our limited funding, we are trying to address that issue at the lowest possible level, and certainly something that is a priority for us at this point in time. The terms of reference of the Central Drug Authority, the representatives from the NGOs, the experts in the field, are appointed on a five-year basis. They may be reappointed once only, so that is the terms of the representatives. From the different government departments, that is at the discretion of their own minister who appoints them. But certainly from the representatives, it's a five-year term of office with the ability to be reappointed for a second term only. The question about the local drug action committees and the contradiction in terms there, we have 382, and what we have asked is that there be a local drug action committee in each of the municipalities. Certainly what we are seeing is that at the present moment we have 182, but the number is growing, and the 182 is probably out of date today because on last week we spoke to a group in the Sebokeng area, and they are going to establish another three local drug action committees. So it's a living number and is growing all the time. But certainly our aim is to get one established within each of the actual municipalities. It requires a commitment, though, from local government in order to be able to fund them, and that is one of the reasons why we are having a problem in the establishing of local drug action committees in each of the provinces, in each of the municipalities, is because of a lack of an understanding of who is going to fund them. Again, this will be addressed in the new bill, in the new act as well. Yes, the question about the NGOs and the communities, I hope that the illustration that I have given there in terms of public input being a priority area for us is in exact return, in exact response to the identified need that we have over there. Rehabilitation centres in the rural area, we would like to see more rehabilitation centres, but there is a new approach that we are looking at and investigating, and this is the ongoing research that is being conducted, where the communities themselves become part of the whole process rather than being dependent on people being taken out of their workplace and rehabilitated, that they can be rehabilitated within their communities. But that also requires that the structures within the community be adapted in such a way that they can deal with assisting those people. Challenges to address the problems and the studies that are required, the reason for the database and the reporting mechanisms is in order to be able to assist us in identifying where the needs are. Again, that deals with that. And Madam Chair, I think if I have left any questions out, please remind me, and if there's any input that anybody else would like to give from the CDA or the department.
Can we run out of time? I would like to at this stage thank the Central Drug Authority and the Department of Rural Development for the presentation. I think the discussions have been fruitful. Honourable members, I'm going to give you a 5 minutes break and then come back for the NGA. We only have up to 12:30 for the presentation. So in the end, we'll give you 15 minutes and we have 15 minutes of question time. Thank you.
I even invited the chair to come to that school. And there was a disclaimer that these people are brought by me. I wasn't present.
I remember
that. Someone. You got me there.
So.
No, but that's good.
Hmm?
That's good. 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 That's good.
We end up being told to do things that we should have done ourselves. This thing about the structure of the city, I even invited people to come to us, and when they came there, I wasn't present.
You are not there.
But I was told, no, this people are invited by the city. I don't know what they're doing here.
But the expert that day decided that he must get an outside person to do the evaluation. So we have got someone to do that.
But that was very early in the year. We don't have a report of it.
At the same time, we just didn't have money. All we could do, remember that time, we could work to it because they didn't want to report to Kwenu. So we are now in the CDA.
We couldn't even listen to what they were saying about the structure of the
world. Yeah, they're proposing that they want a CEO. They want a lot of stuff under that earth. Of course, funding. You know, even federally, they say they can't give us money for that. But the best thing, let it be based on evidence that they need for the work that we evaluate, the work that we and the type of resources.
Have we appointed anybody?
Yeah, we have.
When did we appoint?
I think around September or August.
Where did you get the money?
We didn't take a lot of funds, about 200.
No, I'm just, why only now? Listen, what happened about much?
Yeah, because of the processes of appointing police providing from the department. We don't decide today that we want someone to do the work and tomorrow get somebody else.
Even where you're paying 200,000, it's not a quotation.
Yeah, no, it's not a quotation, but terms of reference still needs to be approved by the one of the committees. Yeah. You remember everything changed this year with the work that needs to be done under 500. No longer automated that you can just do it within the thing. It still has to be to go to the tender adjudication committee. The tender evaluation committee also wants to be called. I know.
Yeah.
Thank you. Can I ask you something, please? I'm a PhD, so your portfolio, of course, your name is...
That's one.
Harvey Eidendorf. It's spelled incorrectly because I didn't spell it.
We did fill in the form and we gave it back there at the front.
The print one.
Okay.
I'm a PhD. Do you think this...
I gave my colleague's name as well.
I've got him, Musa Tlongwa.
Yeah.
Does he have a business card at the
No, my business card's finished.
What is it? He's just... What is Musa's portfolio?
Business executive.
Okay.
I'm the senior manager.
Well, thank you, sir.
Where is the water?
Thank you.